good morning.
Good morning.
So welcome to A Priest and a Rabbi. We are graced by the presence of Rabbi Rose Durbin, who has joined us today, who is the campus rabbi for the organization Hillel at FAU down in Boca. So Rabbi Rose, welcome to our show this morning.
Thanks so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
So we are going to discuss today on the on our podcast, we will be discussing the challenges and the stresses to which our college students face, what some of the experiences they experience through their time in college, and how, as a facilitator and one who actively engages in that process, of what some of those challenges are. So we are grateful that you have joined us this morning.
Happy to be here.
So please stay tuned and like us on social media. Give us 5 stars. Download us. We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. We are on major platforms. Give us a comment. Give us a suggestion. Give us things so that we can best improve our presence here on social media. And without further ado, we present A Priest and a Rabbi.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the program hosts and their guests and are not necessarily those of WSTU, St. Mary's Episcopal Church, and Temple Beit Haim. Products that may be mentioned are not necessarily intended as an endorsement. Any reproduction or retransmission of this broadcast is strictly prohibited. And now, WSTU presents A Priest and a Rabbi. Call in with questions and comments at 220-9788. 220-WSTU. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, Stuart, Florida. It is a wonderful Friday morning here in our WSTU studios in the heart of South Florida. And it is my great honor and privilege to welcome us all back to A Priest and a Rabbi. Although Father Anderson is on assignment today, so he will not be with us, but I do have Rabbi Rose Durbin, the best darn looking rabbi west of the Jordan River.
Aw, thanks, Maddie.
So we are here. So I guess the show should be called today, Two Rabbis and an Absent Priest.
Two Rabbis That Make Out.
Okay.
That's going in the show notes.
Is my face red?
It's kind of like the last show.
Kind of like the last one.
I think the secret's out. We have 3 kids, Maddie.
The secret is out. We do have wonderful 3 children. But it is wonderful to welcome you back. I know that you were with us 52 episodes ago, where we were discussing Judaism, Christianity, and intimacy.
Matt's favorite subject.
It is one of many. One of many that that will get me blushing. a color of a stop sign. But it is great to have you on the show. We are going to be discussing and kind of spilling over on last week's conversation, largely about our youth. And what inspires them? Do they what do they experience largely on college campuses, and what their influences are? So, just a little bit of background information, just so that our listeners have an understanding of what you do, where
sure.
you work, and to whom you come into contact with. So
I definitely have a background in youth education. I've been the director of education at many synagogues, and now I am the rabbi at the Hillel of Broward and Palm Beach, and I mostly am at FAU down in Boca and often at NSU and Davie as well. So I spend all of my time with adorable and crazy college students, so I think I have a pretty good pulse on what's going on with them right now.
Oh, great. So, you know, with your experiences working at Hillel, just a little bit of information for some of our listeners on what is Hillel.
Such a great question. So Hillel's really special because
I'm full of those, by the way. I'm full of good questions.
So impressed, honey. Okay, so Hillel is a little different than a synagogue. At a synagogue, traditionally, you become a member, you pay membership to contribute to the community. Hillel is like totally free for the students. We're just so thrilled for them to walk in the doors. We are very generously, our benefactors are very generous community members, and Hillel International really helps us. And so the students can just come, and it's a safe spot on campus. They can come, know that they're loved. It's definitely a place where everyone knows your name, although they are too young to have ever heard of the show Cheers. But that's the type of environment we're going for. We have Shabbat services, Shabbat dinners. We have classes. We have Israel programming. We have social programming. Just a lot going on for the students, and we're very successful. We reach almost 1,000 students a year, and it's really, really positive. We send kids to Israel. We have leadership training. It's really an important program, especially at FAU. There's not a lot of student life there, and so we're a really important presence on campus.
And the organization itself, it is an international movement. Yes, there are...
All over the world. There's Hillel Moscow. There's Hillel all over the world. We are present on college campuses because college is such an important time for people to really explore their spirituality, their Jewish identity. They're really trying to figure out, it's the first time away from home, they're trying to figure out what type of adults they want to be, and we're trying to get them to be Jewish adults.
So just that last bit of trying to make them... make students more spiritual or observant, whatever the terminology may be. How does the outreach work within the Hillel organization, especially for you down at FAU?
So we are out there all the time. I probably spent 10 hours just this week out on campus. As you always say to me, Matt, what does Rose do for a living? She gives out candy to college students. But that is a lot of what I do. This week we actually, we sat at Starbucks on campus. We're doing Friendsgiving tonight, Friendsgiving Shabbat. So we bought a whole bunch of Friends-themed laptop stickers, which the kids just go crazy for. And we give them out, and you get one if you write down something you're grateful for. And this is for Jewish students, non-Jewish students. We're just trying to get our name out on campus, meet new students, invite them to Hillel. We spend a lot of time out on campus. That's where the students are. Most of them might never walk into Hillel. They might be intimidated. They often don't want to go anywhere where they don't know anyone. And so we're just trying to say, hey, meet us, see who we are. Our rabbi is pink hair. She's not scary. Come hang out with us, learn more. And that's really the first step.
So within the work that you do, do you find that a lot of your students are less observant or spiritually curious, or you know what's the dynamic to those students that you're trying to attract?
So it's really half and half. Half of our students grew up probably going to synagogue, were active in their youth movements, had their bar and bat mitzvahs, and then maybe they drifted away when they first got to college, which is understandable. So those are kind of half of our students. They come back eventually and realize they've really been missing that Jewish community. The other half are students that are Jewish but have really never been involved in formal Jewish life, never been part of a synagogue. I mean, the unaffiliation rates for all religions in this country right now is sky high, and they're really the first generation to show that. I mean, these are Jewish people that have never been to a synagogue. Growing up, for me, I think that number was a lot less. For our parents, it was zero, I would think. So this is the chance to get them in. Birthright is a big way that we get them in. For those of you that don't know, Birthright Israel is an amazing program. It's been going on since I was on the very first trip in 1999 to age myself. And it's completely free. We send students to Israel for 10 days. It's an amazing experience, and literally it is free. And that is a great way to start getting them to connect to Judaism.
So to go back a little bit just on personal history, the work and the influences that you have on college students today, did the rabbi to whom you are today, was it influenced by your upbringing, by your college experiences? What were, just a little bit of background information about you, but also through your college years, were there moments of inspiration that you had from the HILA organization to which you went to in college?
Oh, yeah. So I grew up in Huntsville, Alabama. Not a lot of Jews there, shockingly. Although we did bring a lot of Canadians there for our wedding, which they will never forget. But I really had to become a spokesperson for Judaism. It was either sort of hiding it or just being really out there. So I was out there as a Jew, teaching about it from the beginning. My parents sent me to Jewish summer camp because they really wanted me to be around other Jewish kids. And there I met rabbis who were like wearing yoga pants and just hanging out with us and getting to know us. And I thought, oh, that's really cool. Like, I could be a rabbi that really gets to know kids and really can be like a role model for them. And then when I was in college, I wasn't that active in Hillel yet, but they knew about me. And at the time...
So within your college experience, did you go to a college that had a large percentage of Jews? You know,
just say where... Oh, you just want me to brag that I went to Brown University? Yes. No pressure, but our kids are all going to Brown University. We are already saving. Thank you for asking. Yes, there were a lot of Jews at Brown, but my best friend was Jewish and never went to Hillel, and she's still my best friend today. So I didn't know anyone there, but I went because I was interested in meeting other Jewish kids, but I wasn't particularly like a leader there yet. But I was the head of the Women's Peer Counseling Program, which was basically like the RA program for women at Brown at the time. And so the assistant director of Hillel called me up and said, hey, I want to take you out to coffee, which really blew my mind and made me feel so special. And she said, hey, you're a leader on campus with women's issues. We really want to start women's programming at Hillel. Will you start leading it? And I'll, what am I going to say? I said, oh, I guess, sure, okay. And I started, we called it the Wonderful Jewish Women's Club. And it was really great. And it brought in, every month we had like a discussion. It brought in women from all over campus and never would have come to Hillel. And then that got me really connected to Hillel. And that's exactly what we do now. So however many years later, 20 years later, when I meet a student who I really think has something to add to our community, I take them out to coffee and I get to know them and I say, hey, we noticed a special thing about you. Will you be part of our community? It worked then and it really works now. It makes students feel really special and seen.
And the outreach that you do with Hillel, I mean, how do you reach students today? I mean, look, you know, obviously, you know, our synagogue very well. You know, one of the ways that we reach out to a lot of our members is via email, via text, via phone call, those personal connections. What is it that Hillel does in order to reach that mass population that you're trying to access?
So we are all about personal texting. That's our students live on their phones, and texting them personally is such an important way to connect. So it's not just like a copy and paste, come to Shabbat tonight. It's like a, hey, Matt, how was your chem test this week? I know you were super stressed about it. Love to see you at Shabbat. And that's time consuming. I sent 70 of those texts yesterday. But that really makes students feel special, like we have a real connection and I'm not just trying to recruit them for an event, because it's both things. I want them to come, not only because we do track our numbers and that's really important to us for funding, but also because I really know that they'll enjoy it and it'll be important to them and it'll make their whole week better. So we also are big on social media, big on Instagram, because our students are always on their phones.
And that shift between social media of, say, Facebook as opposed to Instagram. So
Facebook is only for the parents. So I only post on Facebook when I have like something to say about Israel or something to say about the holidays. And it's like very, how we say parav, like very non-controversial and really nice for the parents to see that we're out there with a Jewish message. Whereas on Instagram, we can be a little more, you know, pop culture related, maybe a little off color. Like, we really just try to grab their attention, because they are, apparently they scroll through so fast that you have to get their attention in like 0.2 seconds. That's what the data shows now. So it's like you got to be out there with like something really fun on social media.
And through some of the programs that you do, you know, what's the follow up? Like, you know, you send kids to Israel for a 10-day trip. Presumably there are meetings that are done before to kind of prep our students about what they might experience. And, you know, during the trip itself, I assume that there are personal moments that you share with these students to try and help them process, you know, the experiences they have going through Israel. And then, of course, you know, the follow-up after. What type of stuff do you guys do?
That is something we're always talking about at Hillel because the Birthright experience is so powerful. And thankfully, I have a very supportive husband who lets me go on Birthright every year and leave my family for 2 weeks. So we have I know personally that we have really amazing spiritual conversations on the trip. But then what often happens is they leave for the summer. We don't see them for a couple months, and we try so hard to bring them back in the fall. So we are texting them. We're harassing them out on campus. We're trying to get them to come back in. It's not that easy sometimes because Birthright especially, these are the students who really might never do anything else Jewish, but we got them to go on Birthright. Mm-hmm. So it might be too tall an order to get them to come to a Shabbat dinner, but they might meet me for coffee. And we can process what the trip did for them, and that's huge. They have coffee with the rabbi. Their mom and their bubbies, their grandmas are caviling about this, you know. So that's a really important touchstone too. But follow up is definitely a challenge, but we try all the time to improve it.
And through your experiences, having students go to Israel, you know. What has been some of the very impactful moments for your students when they enter into, you know, they land at Ben Gurion Airport in Tel Aviv? You know, what type of experience? What do you see as a rabbi? For, of course, you know, you have spent a lot of time in Israel.
That's where we met when we were both living in Jerusalem at Shabbat dinner.
Yeah.
Oh my God, yes. He's red now. What is embarrassing about that? You should just know that Matt Durbin is asking me many more questions now than he did on our first date. On our first date in Jerusalem, he talked the entire time, did not ask me a single question. So I'm really enjoying this interchange, by the way.
I don't think the rabbi is.
to answer your question, there are two types of responses. For the kids that grew up at religious school and learned about Israel, it's really cool for them to see, oh my gosh, I learned so much about the Kotel, the Western Wall. I saw so many videos about Jerusalem and the Old City, and now I'm actually here. And that just being there is very powerful for them because they've been hearing about it their whole lives. And of course, I try to step that up. Like, I want them to cry. I'm looking for tears. I want them to have a spiritual transformation. So, you know, if we go to the traditional part of the Kotel, it's there's a men's section and a women's section. So I take the young ladies and I do a blessing for them. I do individual blessings and group blessings. And that just really is very important for them. And then for the students that really had no connection to Israel at all, it's really more through the people that they find a connection, because we have 10 Israeli soldiers on the trip with us, and it's a big reward for them because they really just act as participants. They're tourists in their own country. They bond so much with our students, and when our students meet them and realize, wow, these are real kids our age who are in the army instead of in college, and they really connect with them, and for them, that's the real aha moment of the trip.
Is through your experience as well, sending kids to Israel, is the aim for, you know, Hillel of Palm Beach and Broward County, is your aim to get students right when they complete their first year so that there is follow-up exposure and kind of involvement throughout the rest of their college years? Or do you find that majority of your students that you're sending to Israel happen to be in their final year of college?
Well, we really try to avoid that. We really try to get them to go freshman and sophomore year. You'll hear me say this over and over. I had 3 coffee dates with students yesterday. They're all freshmen, and they all said to me, oh, I'm going to go next year. I'm like, why, sweetie? Like, you never know what's going to happen next year. Your schedule might change. You might change your major. You might have a different job. You're never going to have this chance again. Like, when, Matt, do we have the chance to just go off for 10 days? Like, they don't understand. They think they're so busy. And as I often tell them, this terrifies them. I'm like, guys, you will get busier every year of your life. Like, they don't like to hear that, but it's just the truth. So we really encourage them to go first because they will meet 40 friends on campus, and they will be their friends for the next couple years.
Is when you choose the dates to go to Israel for Birthright, are there other Hillels around the country that have the same time? Do you meet up together, or is it a completely isolated trip?
Oh, no. We meet up with Hillels all over the country. Often, like, for Shabbat, we have Shabbat with – recently we had Shabbat with California schools. I think it was University of California in Berkeley we'd Shabbat with, and the kids could connect with them. I mean, Birthright's going on constantly.
And just for our listeners out there that may not be familiar with Birthright, who funds Birthright?
Well, it started with Jewish philanthropists and the government of Israel, and that's still who supports it today.
Which is, just for some of our listeners who may not be familiar, you know, Birthright has sent, and I'm not sure what the numbers are, but something like 600,000 Jews.
The goal is to reach a million.
You know, over the course of the last 25 years, largely supported by the Bronfman family, who have supported the organization for a very long time. And if you had a message to a lot of our students as to go to Israel now, or, well, manana, I'll do it next year, I'll do it when I can. You know, would there be a message that you would send to students?
Yeah. Sometimes our students at FAU, they haven't traveled a lot. Some of them have never been on a plane. They feel a lot of anxiety about traveling. Most of them stayed at FAU because they wanted to be close to their families. So these are not always, I love them dearly, but they're not always the most adventurous students. And so you would think it'd be so easy. Like, of course I'll go. And that's what it was like when Birthright first started. Because, I mean, are you kidding me? This is amazing. But, you know, you really have to sort of convince them. I mean, I know it sounds crazy. I was shocked when I started working at Hillel. I was like, what do you mean Birthright recruitment? Don't they come running to us? It really just takes building relationships. So once they really feel comfortable getting to know me and the other the staff members that'll be there, and I'll be on the plane with them. I'll be with them every step of the way. I'll talk to their parents on the phone first to answer all of their questions about safety. Once they have a relationship, it's much easier for them to feel comfortable to come.
And for your students, just you raised a really important issue, which is safety and security. Do you find that some of your students waver a little bit in terms of, well, I just don't know if the Middle East is safe, if you know, God forbid something were to happen? I mean, how do you quench some of those feelings for our students about safety given the trip?
Oh, it's really important. It's a real concern for them. And I actually love when I get this question from students or their parents, because I can say with absolute conviction, there's nowhere I feel safer on this planet than in Israel. I wish that I felt as safe here in America, to be honest. You know, when you go to restaurants in Israel, they check your bag. You know, there's security everywhere you go. There's security at the train stations. There's security everywhere. And why don't we have that here? So I really feel tremendously safe. But also, Birthright is so heavily monitored. I mean, we are in touch with the Israeli government every day to make sure that our itinerary is safe. We never go anywhere even close to any of the controversial areas that you hear about on the news. We primarily are in Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, a little bit up north in the Golan, doing a nice jeep ride, but it's nothing close to any areas where there are rockets or anything like that. And we also have a guard on the trip, and we have 10 really cute Israeli soldiers with us. So once I explain all that to parents, they feel a lot more secure.
And I would assume, too, that, you know, especially for some of our listeners who may not be familiar with that region of the world, is that Israel is a military state as opposed to America, which is not. And I think that people need to be aware that under a military state, that not only do you have the military presence, you also have the police, you have the Jewish agencies, you have all these organizations that are out to protect, you know, the citizens and the country itself.
The worst thing for Israel would be for something to happen to an American kid on Birthright. Nothing bad has ever happened, and it won't. Like, they take the safety of Birthright to the utmost importance.
Hmm. So, you know, with the follow-up of what your students come back and they experience, you know, I would assume that one of the impactful experiences that they share is, as you mentioned, you know, the Kotel, the Western Wall, which I'm sure, you know, conjures up huge emotive feelings. Are there any other instances throughout, you know, the 10-12-day experience with Israel that your students find are having real challenges processing?
Well, for some of them, it might be their first Shabbat experience ever. On my last Birthright trip in May, the timing just worked out really great, and we had two Shabbats on the trip. And for a few of our students, they've never experienced Shabbat. And so that was a little challenging for them. We asked them to put away their phones for most of the day. We asked them to pray together. That might be very uncomfortable for some students who don't feel knowledgeable about Jewish prayer. That can be very challenging for them. But we really were very knowledgeable about that. We worked through it. We're very transparent about, hey, we know where you guys are with this. We know services aren't for everyone, you know, but it's important for them to kind of sit in their uncomfortability a little bit.
And you know, given the nature of, you know, your students' experiences with Yad Vashem, and just for those that are not familiar, Yad Vashem is the Holocaust Museum that is in Jerusalem. You know, how do your students react to that?
So that's really, for me, the most important day of the trip. There's basically six things that every single Birthright trip has to do. It's a requirement. One of them is going to Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial Museum. It's not only is it such an important learning experience for our students, but really just as museums go, it is such a powerful experience. I mean, it's so well done, the way that it's planned and the way the educators walk you through it. So what we do is we go there in the morning, we unpack that a little bit. It's very heavy for them. Some of them might not have a personal connection at all to the Holocaust, and some of them know that their families perished, and some of them have no connection. And I really want them to, everyone now is a little desensitized, right? We see so much on the news, and you kind of have to, just to get through the day, be a little desensitized because there's so much sad stuff going on. And I really want to break them down on that day. That is a day I'm really strict. If I see kids not paying attention, if I see them with their phones out, like, that is when the wrath of Rabbi Rose comes out, unlike any other day on the trip. Then we have a little break, and after that experience, and then we go to Har Herzl, which is the military cemetery. And that is a very powerful experience because as we walk through it, they see all of the ages on the tombstones are their ages. So they walk through and it's 19, 20, 21, 18, over and over and over again, and for thousands and thousands of graves. And you walk up the mountain and you're seeing all of this, and you don't even have to narrate that much because the impact hits them that while they're out going to tailgates and frat parties, their brothers and sisters in Israel are dying so that we can have a Jewish state. And then during the tour, the Israeli soldiers who are in uniform that day, they're required to be in uniform at Yad Vashem and Har Herzl, they talk a little bit. They'll find a friend that died in their unit and talk about them very simply. And what more can you say? And then we get to the very top of the mountain. We process that whole day, and they finally feel like, wow, like, this is what we sacrificed to have a Jewish state. This is why we have a Jewish state. It's a very important day pedagogically. And then we usually let them go out that night and get some of that stress out.
And you know, when they land back on American soil, they land back in Florida, they go back to their college classes, you know, do you find through, you know, your ear to the ground, so to speak, of hearing of those students who went to Israel to express their experiences to other students who are slightly disconnected in some way to Judaism or to
faith? That's what we tell our students. We're like, you guys had an amazing time. You're now ambassadors for this trip. Like, you got to get out there and tell students how fun it was, how much you loved it, like, that they have to go. Like, you have to do that for us because students won't listen to us. They'll listen to you. And so we really, like, I even had a text exchange with a student named Justin who went on Birthright with me a couple of years ago. I've been trying to get his girlfriend to go on Birthright for years, and she just won't go. She won't go. And so we're kind of conspiring together to get her to go because the experience was so powerful for him that we're kind of tag teaming her to, like, force her to go because we know what a powerful experience it will be for her. But some students are really reluctant.
So just to play, let's play priest today. So from a interfaith perspective, I mean, is there work that you do amongst the interfaith community? Obviously, you know, your focus is Judaism and the Jewish students on campus, but is there some connection with, you know, the non-Jewish students on campus to get them, informed about what Jewish practice is and vice versa? Is there that type of stuff?
Oh, we do that So much. Everyone is welcome at Hillel. That's our tagline. Hillel is your home. Everyone is welcome. There are really only two programs we have at Hillel that you have to be Jewish for, actually. One of them is Birthright, and one of them is a Jewish Learning Fellowship, which we can talk about later. Everything else, everyone is welcome to come. Shabbat dinners, our weekly lunches. We often have non-Jewish students. You know, our students bring friends, and we welcome that. One of our missions is to make is to end anti-Semitism, and the way you end anti-Semitism is to get people to be with us and to learn about us and to ask their questions and feel comfortable. It's really hard to hate Jews after you've been given 50 free Shabbat dinners. Like, it's just hard to hate us then, you know? So that's what we're doing. But we have an Owls for Israel club on campus. And their goal is really just to reach non-Jewish students. And so they do a lot. We have Israel Awareness Month in February. We're going to have, like, we have a culture shook, a culture celebration, and we do big stuff out on campus to let people see that Israel's not just about the conflict. It's also about LGBTQ rights. It's about it's the greatest democracy in the Middle East. We're leaders in medical innovation. Like, we're trying to get all of those messages out there. And we send 20 non-Jewish students to Israel a year on a special trip. We send non-Jewish students to AIPAC, which is the Israeli lobbying conference. We really want them to learn more and connect. And I am in a group with interfaith clergy. So I have my own kind of Christian Anderson. And we have meetings together with all of the other interfaith clergy on campus to try to have events together. It's very important.
Oh, so we're just going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'd like to explore the issues of what stresses and challenges that our students face today on college campuses and how that's mitigated. And also, you know, talking about, you know, students' relationships with religion. Are they accessing it? Are they open-minded? Are we closed in some way? And as professional leaders, how do we harness that? So we'll be back in a few, and we look forward to continuing the conversation.
You're listening to A Priest and a Rabbi podcast. If you haven't done so yet, make sure to subscribe. And please leave a rating and a review, 5-star rating and a positive review if you can. We certainly appreciate it. That is the best way to make sure that others out there just like you can find this podcast. If you want to get in contact with Father Christian and Rabbi Durbin, you can do so by emailing apriestandarabbi@gmail.com. And the absolute best way to get a hold of the fellas is to call into the radio show. This podcast airs live on the radio every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. on WSTU 1450. And you can listen live online at WSTU1450.com. And if you want to join the show, you can call in to 772-220-9788. That's 772-220-WSTU.
Hey, everyone. This is Father Christian here on A Priest and a Rabbi. So happy for you to be here on this podcast with us. And I want to let you know that I have started a YouTube channel called Your Favorite Christian, and you can check it out on YouTube. And every Monday, I drop a new episode, and it's always through the lens of faith, but taking on different topics such as dating, relationships, marriage, pop culture. I've done one recently where I went out to the art show and talked about how do we find our relationship with God through all the what all the latest artists are doing. Last week was what do women really want in a man, and interviewing different people to be a part of that. So please check that out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, share, put on the notification so you get that every Monday. I also want to let you know of this podcast wouldn't be here if it wasn't for a generous donor from St. Mary's Episcopal Church who wishes to remain anonymous. All he asked, though, was that the information gets out that St. Mary's Episcopal Church here in Stuart has a healing center. And so you can call if you're looking for a counselor, someone to be there for you during a challenging time. And you can call the church at 772-287-3244. We also have a group of Stephen ministers who have been trained, over 50 hours of training, to be with you and walk with you during a time of crisis. They are not counselors. They are trained just to be more of the presence of Christ or and walk with you during a time of crisis, whether it's a good crisis of having, oh my gosh, my daughter's about to get married, or if there's something a little bit heavier. So give us a call, 772-287-3244, and I thank that anonymous donor who makes this all possible. All right, God bless you, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
Welcome back, Stuart. Welcome back to A Rabbi and a Rabbi Walk Into a Radio Station. We are a priest and a rabbi, minus a priest, add an additional rabbi, and we have our show this morning. We are talking today about college, our students, how our youth are impacted by religious moments, religious experiences through their life, through their upbringing, and what they experience on campuses today. I do have a very special guest, Rabbi Rose Durbin. I do know her. I know her well.
Biblically.
Okay, thank you. Which is nice because, you know, the flow of conversation. We don't very often get to have it.
I know. This is like a date. It's like a day date. This is so nice.
But you know, to go back on the conversation in terms of, you know, you work with a lot of students. And for those that are just not familiar, Rabbi Rose is the campus rabbi for Hillel at FAU at Lynn University and
Nova Southeastern.
Yes, down in Fort Lauderdale. So, you know, you work with a lot of students. And through your experiences working with these college students, do you find that there are challenges or there are stresses that our college students are facing today? If we look at it from a Jewish perspective, you know, do you find that our students are experiencing forms of either overt or inadvertent anti-Semitism challenges, you know, on college campuses? What has been your experience?
Well, we've been really lucky. We haven't had a lot of anti-Semitic action on at FAU. That was a problem quite a few years ago. And it's really gotten much better for us, although it is a big problem at other campuses right now. The main issue for our students is purely stress and how they deal with it. My main concern this year is really making sure we're supportive of their mental health and their well-being. So next semester, we're doing a program called Wellness Wednesdays. And every Wednesday, we'll have lunch and learn something about Jewish values and wellness and how central it is to take care of their mind, body, and souls, especially in college. Every semester, I'm just seeing them be more and more stressed.
Are you also finding that through your work that you are also involved administratively with the administration at FAU or on the college campuses in terms of trying to exert yourself as a Jewish presence, that there are, you know, certain challenges that our students face that perhaps not every single student faces throughout their college experience? You know, is there a conversation that happens between you or, you know, Hillel and, you know, the organization?
Oh, definitely. One of my roles is to create these connections out on campus. So we have a great connection now with Greek Life so that they know to schedule their fall activities in a way that's respectful of the Jewish holidays. We have a very close relationship with the counseling center on campus. So that's where we're always promoting that students can go get counseling same day they're feeling anxious, like that resource is available to them. Yeah, we work very closely with the campus.
And when you look at the, you know, the young adults that you're counseling with or that you're interacting with, you know, do you find that some of the major issues that we face today, major challenges we face today, bullying, temptations, the influence of drugs, you know, is that something that that is of concern for our students today?
Absolutely. And I really have a window into their lives because for some reason they let me follow them on Instagram. And so on the weekends, I'm really able to see what they're doing, what they're wearing. And I see it for sure on Birthright because we, you know, the drinking age is 18 there. So I'm able to really see how they react to these temptations. Listen, that's the whole thing about college, right? They have to sort of figure out their limits and they have to figure out how to take care of themselves and how to prioritize school. I mean, often they get to campus and they're so excited by everything that's going on, tailgates and Greek life, and all of a sudden they're failing three classes And they have to sort of realize for the first time, no one's here to save me. I could lose my scholarship. I would have to go home. I love college. I want to be here. I should fight for this. And so we're really there to sort of support them. And part of the conversations we have is, well, how do you go to a tailgate and be able to function later? You know, how do you say no to things? How do you make sure that your sex life is safe and respectful? We get into all of these conversations.
So if you have a question that you would like to ask Rabbi Rose, please give us a call at WSTU. It is 772-220-9788. That is 772-220-9788. Any questions that you have regarding college life, religious life, you know, and you have that burning desire to ask, please give us a call. Again, 772-220-9788. So, Rabbi Rose, if we're looking at some of the challenges that our college students face today, do you find that religion is on the periphery for a lot of our students, and your responsibility? Do you have a counterpart from a Christian perspective on campus?
Sure. There's other pastors and ministers out on campus, and that's part of our interfaith clergy group.
But not so much like an interfaith clergy group, but, you know, you have Hillel.
Yeah.
Is there some other Christian ministry that is...
Oh, yeah. They have groups and they have meetings and everything. Now, we really have the best space on campus. We're really lucky. We're right in the middle of campus, and the other groups don't have that. So they're always welcome to use our space, but they have challenges even just finding space. But there's a lot of Christian activity on campus, actually, and it's very positive. And I think it's a wonderful support for those students, and that's the kind of support we try to offer our students as well. But is religion on the periphery? Actual religion, yes. I think our students are very grateful to have Hillel, but as far as actually having an inner prayer life or a connection to God or being able to really converse confidently about Judaism, that's what I'm trying to work on. I think most of our students come in and say, oh, I'm proud of being Jewish, or I'd like to learn more, but that's sort of where it ends. And so what I'm trying to do is really get them to start asking the questions and feel, I mean, that's what Judaism is. It's just asking questions. So if I can just get them to start being interested and asking questions, I've done my job.
And how do you improve for yourself personally, spiritually, academically, in terms of being current or not burning out? Or
oh, me personally?
Are there conferences that you go to every single year? Or is there, I mean, I know you obviously have a tremendous amount of staff meetings. And just for
yes,
those that don't
do.
Know, it's because when I call and I get a text that says I'm in a meeting.
Constantly.
And those happen often. But, you know, in terms of how do you, for yourself, improve your own ability to lead and be present with our students' lives through conferences, through interactions.
Sure. Well, as you know, you've known me for quite a while. I do have some kind of inner well of energy that keeps me going. We don't know how it works. I sleep an average of an hour a night. So thank God that I really, literally thank God that I'm able to function every day, you as well. But yeah, I go to yoga a lot. That helps. So again, thanks for being such a supportive spouse. But yeah, we have Hillel conferences, but really it's just the work that keeps me energized. I mean, everyone's so nice to me at work. No one yells at me like at home, not my husband, my kids. But speaking of questions, you'd asked me about questions the students have before. Should I share some questions
please,
my students have?
Please.
So I've been doing, every semester I do this Jewish Learning Fellowship. It's a really amazing program. Students commit to 10 weeks of Jewish learning. We meet Monday nights, and of course I feed them. I am a Jewish mother, so I feed them, of course. And it's a set group of about 18 students. And we have conversations every Monday night. There's a different theme every Monday night. It could be sex. That's always a fun one. Matt would run away from that one. It could be friendship, social media, the role of Shabbat or Sabbath in their lives. And they have to be off their phones, which is the big thing. But they commit to it, and it's a really powerful experience for them because, as I explained to them, it's an hour and a half every week. That's just for them. It's for their own spiritual development. It's for them to ask hard questions. It's not a class. There's no grade. There's no judgment. And they can actually make real friends because they put down their phones and actually make eye contact and speak about personal things. So the last session every semester is Ask the Rabbi. So we had that last night at NSU. And I wanted to share some of the questions they had because it's really indicative of where their minds are and how when they're given the space to ask anonymous questions, they really are asking serious questions. They really have spiritual matters on their minds. So this one was a great one. Have you ever thought there's not a God? They would never ask me that face to face because they don't even want, I don't know, people to know that they care about God or that they're thinking about God. I mean, it's just not what the kids are talking about, right? They're talking about like binging, you know, episodes of The Office and Friends. They're not talking about God. And so
Do you find that that's a recurring theme amongst a lot of your students in terms of, you know, the notion that, you know, I can't show you God or prove God exists, but it, you know, in terms of as a rabbi, how do you address that question? Because
it's really important. And I also think to ask a question, have you ever thought there was not God? Probably the person that asked that has that fear that there's no God or has had that doubt and they're too scared to ask it, or they think maybe I'll judge them if they've doubted that God exists. So, you know, I do talk to them about my faith, which is very strong, but I also tell them, listen, I've been so blessed and lucky. I haven't had a tragedy in my life. And that's often when our doubts about God or our anger at God really creeps up. But I do think that my faith will carry me through if something like that happens. But I understand if there are times you doubt God. And so it's very important to bring that up with the students.
So just to go on that question, because I think it's a very powerful one, and just to bring your daughter into it. So there was a time where, and I don't know if it's our daughter likes to push buttons, but we'll be driving in the car and she'll say to me, you know, Dad, I don't believe in God. And I don't know, I don't know if it's trying to push buttons or if she's, exploring. And, you know, for those, well, I guess all of you out there know.
The worst thing you can do, she wants to get a reaction from us, right? The worst thing you can do is yell at her or something, although I'm inclined to.
But I think even with, from a mind of an 8-year-old as opposed to the mind of a 20-year-old or even a 19-year-old, 18-year-old, is still the same, right? Because from the mind of your daughter at 8 who is asking the question, in her mind she's saying, but I can't see God. And if I can't see God, it doesn't exist. And I think the same challenge with our students is that notion. And, and I hope you like my response that I do tell our daughter.
Which is,
I say to her, I can't show you God, but you can feel God. Show me how I can feel God. That's not how she talks. But, in terms of what I will say to her is, do you love me? Yes. Well, how do you know? I don't know. I can feel it. Well, it's the same feeling that we have with God. I can't show you God, but you can have spiritual experiences that make you feel good, which is the God in you. And I wonder, is that type of conversation that you're having with some of our students who, because like you said, to ask the question means that there must have been something in our lives that have impacted us to be able to say, maybe I struggle with God and I struggle with the understanding that is there one, is there not one?
Oh, absolutely. And listen, when I meet our sweet baby freshmen at FAU, I'm really able to like empathize so much with their experience because that's Ellie in 10 years. I mean, to me, it's not that I treat them like babies, but I mean, I just see that they're little still, and they still have these same struggles, and yet now they're living on their own and they still have all these same questions. So that's exactly how I describe it to them. Like I say to them, listen, I think a lot of people struggle with God because they have had tragedy in their life and they think, well, God's in charge of everything, so God did that, so I don't believe in God. And I have to say something really controversial to them, which is that, guys, I don't actually think God decides who gets sick or who dies when. Like, I don't believe that, but I believe that God is the reason we get through tragedy. God is with us like your best friend, like your mom and dad, like that unconditional love. I said, my best friend's sick. The students know that I talk about him. Like, guys, I can't believe for a second that God chose my best friend, who's not yet 40, who has a kid, to have metastatic cancer. Like, that's just not how God works. But the fact that she has so much support and love in her life is because of God. And that's how I present it to them, in a positive way, not a negative way.
So any other questions that our students are asking?
They love to ask, is there a heaven or hell? That's a big one that always comes up every time, which I think is really important. And what I always stress to them is, guys, something I love about Judaism is that we need to be the menschiest, the best people we can be on earth. We don't know what's going to happen after. So we have to just be the best we can be every day and try to follow, you know, the guidelines of the Torah and our tradition every day, because this is it. Like, this is what we have. Mm-hmm. This is our lives. Yeah. And it's really, I really try to teach the kids that, like, Judaism is like a mindfulness exercise. So, like, life can just go. And Judaism is what makes you stop and look at the people in your life. I mean, I always tell them, like, guys, when I'm home on Shabbat, you know, I bring the kids in from the kitchen. I make them turn off YouTube. They're so grumpy. They're so tired. I make them sit in the kitchen and light candles and do the blessings. They're rolling their eyes. They're fidgety. They're exhausted. This is a scene we're very familiar with. But we have to look each other in the eye. I tell them I love them. I tell them Shabbat Shalom. I give them a blessing. They don't want it, but you know what? I think somewhere in there, they're glad that we're having that time together.
Do you find that, especially given the question that you just posed, that, you know, when you effectively say to our students, you know, in Judaism, we do not believe in hell, that, you know, kind of ears perk up a little bit in terms of, wow, what do you mean?
That happened last night. I said, guys, you know, hell for us is you know, the few times it's mentioned, it's really more of a metaphor or an allegory. But really, we're not trying to scare you into being good. We just want you to be good, because that's what God tells you to do these things, so do them. Don't worry about what happens next. Just listen to what God's telling you.
And just as a couple follow-up more questions,
sure.
I know we are running out of time.
This one's great. As a rabbi, have you engaged in activity that would be seen as unlawful in the Torah, i.e. cheating, stealing, sex before marriage? This one, they always ask me if I've had sex before marriage. Oh God, he's going to turn tomato red again. they're really fascinated by this, and I think it's very important. Listen, this is a group of students I've been with for 10 weeks, so I'm pretty open with them at this point. I think it's important for them to know that it's okay to ask these questions, and it's okay. You know, we're not expecting you to be perfect. What is perfect? Should you? And I'm very open with them about this, that just because I'm a rabbi, I'm not a perfect human. I'm just trying to teach them about Torah and be the best person I can be. But, I haven't always done everything according to the book, if you will. But that's where I've learned, and that's the experiences I have to share with them. So I'm very open with them about that.
And just one more final question, sure, that that your students have asked.
Oh yeah, they the kids down at NSU are very interested in these questions. What is the most important thing to do to be great in relationships? Because they're really trying to navigate even just friendships and how to have real relationships. And I always tell the students, listen, guys, it's better to have 3 close friends you can trust than a million friends that don't know you. And we talk a lot during this Jewish Learning Fellowship about what it really means to be a real friend and what it means. Like, what we look at Jewish texts dating back thousands of years where the rabbis were still arguing about how can you be the best friend possible? Why is friendship important in your life? And we're looking at these texts, and I say, hey guys, isn't it kind of amazing that our rabbis were talking about, they were talking about sex, they were talking about relationships, they were talking about how to live your best life in ways that you can actually relate to, and Judaism is here as a guide for you. It's not like a weight, an albatross on your shoulders. It's like it's a resource for you. So I want to teach you how to use it.
And you know, when your students phase out and graduate, is there follow up that's done with your organization, and you know, say college kids who they finish their undergraduate degree, maybe they go off to, you know, to a master's program or a graduate school program, either in state or out of state, or perhaps don't. Is there follow up that you guys do in terms of reconnecting?
Oh yeah, we try to get them to donate to Hillel. But yeah, we encourage them to connect with their Jewish communities where they are now and try to give them the tools to do that.
So just before we run out of time, if there is one thought that you would like to impress upon our college students today in terms of engagement, in terms of access to, you know, religious theology, religious understanding, community, what would it be?
Absolutely. What I always tell the students, especially on Birthright, I have this mantra, this is now. Like, this is your college experience. You know, you can be stressed all the time, or you can hide in your room and watch Netflix, but this is it. You will never have this time again. So come to Hillel, try something new, meet new people, get out there, learn new things, ask questions, because this is your time to do that. You know, they think there's always going to be more time, and but life is short, and this is the moment for them to come explore. And so I'm just like, guys, let's do this.
So on behalf of A Priest and a Rabbi, Rabbi Rose, thank you very much for joining us today. If you are down in the Boca area, please join Rabbi Rose and the Hillel community at FAU for their Shabbat evening services. They begin at what time? 6 o'clock?
Uh-huh.
6 o'clock. So, you know, if you are down there and you want to experience it, come join. Just a brief note, if those of our listening community are interested and available this Sunday at 4 o'clock at Temple Beit Hayam, we are having our third annual Interfaith Thanksgiving service. It will begin promptly at 4 o'clock at Temple Beit Hayam, which is 951 Southeast Monterey Commons Boulevard. All are welcome to attend. If you do plan on joining us, please, if you wouldn't mind, bring us a non-perishable item to which we can donate to the House of Hope to give others an opportunity to eat and to be part of community. So that is this Sunday, the 24th at 4 o'clock. We thank you very much and have a wonderful and restful weekend, and we look forward to connecting with you next week.